Welcome to Earth Eats. I'm Kate Young. Today on our show, with its purchase of Whole Foods, Amazon hopes to change the way you get your groceries. That story from Harvest Public Media. And a group of friends turns the concept of a share economy into a festive annual cooking event.
I have the wonderful opportunity to work with the jalapenos, which is why I'm wearing these blue surgical gloves so that I don't end up with hot jalapeno on my face all day.
Plus, a favorite tomatilla salsa recipe, all just ahead on Earth Eats. First, let's check in with Mark Chilla for news.
Thanks, Kate, and hey, welcome aboard. First up, Texas farmers are still reeling in the wake of record-breaking rainfall and contaminated floodwaters from Hurricane Harvey. Many farms are still too wet to assess damage, but officials say cotton and cattle are among the worst hit, with damage estimates totaling $150 million in losses for cotton crops alone. Wind and floodwaters have scattered and contaminated cotton still sitting in fields. Nearly half of all U.S. cotton is produced in Texas. This year's cotton crop was one of the largest in recent memory. Much of the state's grain crops had already been harvested, but storage facilities were badly damaged. Damage has not been tallied for the state's 1.2 million beef cows. And sugar substitutes are all the rage these days. And there's a new one on the way, though its origins might surprise you. It's the sugar found in human breast milk. Berkeley-based tech startup Sugar Logics wants to replicate the sugar found in human milk to produce healthier formula for infants and explore potential health benefits for adults. Human milk sugars can't be digested by humans, and they don't make food sweet, but they do feed the good bacteria called bifidobacterium found in your gut. If you're picturing rows and rows of humans hooked up to pumps, well, don't. The new sugar substitute won't come from actual breast milk, but will be replicated in a lab through yeast fermentation. Chad Bouchard and Taylor Killow rounded up these stories, and you can read them over at eartheats.org. And we got more stories on Twitter, too, at EarthEats.
Thank you for that, Mark Chilla.
Sure thing, Kate.
Amazon wants to change how you get your groceries, and it took a huge step toward that goal this summer when it announced it was buying Whole Foods Market, a sizable natural and organic food grocer. U.S. regulators recently okayed the deal, but as Harvest Public Media's Luke Runyon reports, ramping up online grocery shopping has been a tough sell for many retailers.
Each weekend during the summer and fall, Steve Ela packs up a semi-truck full of fruit.
Sweet cherries, plums, peaches, pears, apples.
And drives it from his farm in western Colorado, the state's fruit-growing region, to cities like Denver, Boulder, and Fort Collins. Ela's fruit travels even further when he ships to a Whole Foods distribution center, where it's sent to stores throughout the Rocky Mountains. In a given year, Ela sells about a third of his crop to the natural foods grocer.
They've often paid us more than, you know, some other outlets. And, you know, honestly, they're the only big box store we work with.
Whole Foods has made a name for itself trying to emulate a farmer's market, where you walk inside and find produce from lots of local farms. It's warm and inviting inside. Its potential new owner, Amazon, has built its reputation on ruthless efficiency, adopting robots in its warehouses, even suggesting drones could be the future of home delivery.
I didn't expect Amazon because, you know, I personally don't think of them as food retailers.
If the two companies merge, Ela's fruit would be rolled under Amazon's corporate umbrella. And Amazon is intent on becoming a food retailer, and a big one. To get a sense of its ambition, take this commercial. There's a woman at the fridge. She starts talking into this little gadget.
Ask all recipes for a shrimp pasta recipe.
My recommendation is champagne shrimp and pasta recipe. Main ingredients are shrimp, mushrooms, plum tomatoes, cream, and Parmesan cheese.
Mushrooms, tomatoes.
Her grocery list starts popping up on her phone. It places the order, and later that day, she's unloading her Amazon grocery bags left at the front door. That's not futuristic. In some US cities, like Denver, the company's grocery delivery service called Amazon Fresh is up and running. I'm standing outside of a new Amazon warehouse a few miles north of downtown Denver. You can actually see the skyline from here. It looks like any other warehouse, blue and white with a bunch of trucks. But this building is a key part of a larger push by Amazon to build up its infrastructure in grocery delivery. And it's hoping and really making the case to consumers that you'll want to start buying more food online.
Maybe 5-10 years ago, people would have never thought that everyday ordinary consumer would be interested in buying their groceries online.
Pamela Riemenschneider is editor of Produce Retailer, a trade magazine for fruit and vegetable growers. She says Amazon's move to buy Whole Foods shows it's serious about making online groceries mainstream. And instead of hiring their own teams of produce buyers and building food system know-how from scratch,
buying Whole Foods outright means that they don't have to do all of that legwork. And that's years worth of legwork. That's not something that you can do in 6 months.
Grocery is sort of the last flavor of retail to really come online in a big way.
Jordan Rost is with the market research firm Nielsen. Many big grocery chains have already been experimenting with curbside pickup and home delivery. But he says Amazon's play will intensify the competition. That Sunday afternoon shopping trip to pick up weekly essentials could soon be replaced by a box on your doorstep.
Services like meal kit services and even restaurant delivery services have gotten consumers more comfortable with the idea of buying food online and having it show up at their door in really good condition.
Amazon will still need to jump a bunch of hurdles, like building and maintaining relationships with farmers and convincing finicky shoppers they can deliver good produce. Then there's the human element. Fruit grower Steve Ela says food experiences, like picking out produce, aren't meant to be automated. They're personal and intimate.
Value added isn't just in agriculture, isn't just processing and jams and things, but it's value added by putting customer service and words and people. We see those same people week after week and say, how are you today? You know, how's your son? That's hard to emulate online.
Luke Runyon, Harvest Public Media.
Find more stories like this at harvestpublicmedia.org. Coming up, it's salsa season. We've got two methods just ahead. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses, located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Need more coffee roasters? A woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. Needmoreroasters.com. And Charles Schwab & Company Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leaders Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. In traditional farming communities, several households might get together to put up the season's green beans, or get the peaches canned in quart jars with a light syrup, or maybe make enough blackberry jam to last three families through the winter. The phrase, many hands make light work, really comes into play when you're talking about food preservation. Collective cooking has the added benefit of building community. Here's a story of those food traditions revived and a group of friends making good use of another brilliant farmsteading practice, the outdoor kitchen or summer kitchen.
I have the wonderful opportunity to work with the jalapenos, which is why I'm wearing these blue surgical gloves so that I don't end up with hot jalapeno on my face all day.
We learn
with practice. None of us are at our first rodeo, I think.
So can you tell me where you are and what you're doing?
I'm at the salsa weekend of the year and we're here making lots and lots of salsa, hoping to set a new record in canned salsa.
We are on a beautiful porch in Brown County. It's a lovely day. Sun and a nice breeze and some birds and some crickets. And we are making salsa to hopefully last us through the winter when we all need a taste of summer. And it's a group of women. And we come together to chop vegetables and cook salsa and enjoy each other's company and eat some delicious food.
That was Mary Beth O'Brien, Jean Haley, and Laura Haley. The day I joined them in late August, about 20 to 25 women were gathered at Meadowlark, Marcia Veldman's farm in southern Indiana. They've been gathering annually in a spacious outdoor kitchen for this salsa-making event, sharing equipment and pooling resources to make large batches of salsa for canning. At the end of the long summer day, each woman takes home her share of jarred salsa. I asked Carrie Newcomer, who was chopping sweet peppers under a green canvas patio umbrella, how many years she'd been coming to Salsa Day.
Well, someone told me once, no matter how many years ago you think something is, you should double it. But I think five or more. I'm thinking five, so it might be somewhere in there.
I was trying to remember that earlier, and I think at least five, maybe more. Between five and ten, I'm going to say.
So I've been coming since 2011, so this would be my sixth year.
This is my second year, so I'm very, very excited and grateful to be here.
This is my third year.
I think I've been here from the beginning. Did we establish a beginning date?
It's got to be 10 years, at least.
She said, Marcia said that this was the 20th year.
Oh, God. Have I been here since the beginning?
Before the beginning.
Okay, I don't know.
To get the whole story on the origins of this tradition, I sat down with host and founder, Marcia Veldman, on her front porch.
This is the 20th annual gathering.
Wow, 20 years. What initially inspired you to do it?
So it was the first year I lived here and had a big garden. A friend was growing for market here, and we just had a bumper crop of tomatoes. And so just four of us got together and made salsa, and we had so much fun doing it that then the next year someone else said, well, can I do this with you guys too? And we just kind of kept adding more people and more tomatoes, and now it's a big gathering. We've actually been using the same recipe all 20 years, and it's a really good recipe. Over the years, as the amount of salsa we make has grown, we've really developed a system so that we can keep track amongst the mayhem.
I can remember the early days when we were trying to make sure the salsa was nice and chunky. So we would pour the cooked salsa into the colander, and then all that delicious sauce would pour through, and we were pouring it down the drain. Right, I know. And then it's just like, wait a minute, guys, we need to jar that stuff and make the most delicious Bloody Marys, or make the most delicious soup base, or stuff to cook your rice in. So, I mean, I remember the year that we kind of had that idea, and I can think about everything throughout the system and sort of remember the year we came up with that system or that protocol and why we did it and how we did it before and why it's such a well-oiled machine.
I asked Marcia if all those gorgeous fresh vegetables for the salsa came from her own farm.
Quite a bit comes from the farm, and then other people have gardens and they bring product, and then we buy a lot at the farmers market too. This year it looks like we'll do something like 180 to 200 pounds of tomatoes being processed. So,
and about how many jars of salsa is that going to be?
I can answer that one later.
Okay, yeah, it sounds good.
Last year, I keep notes every year, like how many, we call them kits, when it's like a full batch of salsa is a kit. And then I also track how many different sizes of jars that we were able to produce.
The process starts with the kits. I visited Tiffany Kinney at the weighing station to find out what makes a kit.
I am weighing the tomatoes and getting all the produce ready so it can go up to the processors.
What all goes into a kit?
15 pounds tomatoes, 4 bell peppers, 10 hot peppers, and then 5 mild peppers, 2 bulbs of garlic, and 6 onions. Then we'll do about 12 kits today.
Next, I stepped over to the processing table to see if I could pin Mary Beth down on the recipe.
We have tomatoes, of course. We have onions, we have sweet peppers and hot peppers. And then we have some vinegar and then some dry ingredients, which includes sugar, cumin. Oops, wait.
Is that your secret recipe?
That's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say anything else.
Okay, so we got the basics.
Is the stage that I enjoy the most, where we get the kits and we start chopping and putting everything in the food processor. So I just chopped a bunch of beautiful heirloom tomatoes and put them in the food processor, and now they're going to go into the sauce pot. There's the kit that's full of vegetables. It has like the tomatoes, the peppers, the garlic, the onions. And then there's a jar that has all the vinegar that you need. And then another jar, which is really beautiful, that has the salt and the spices in it and the sugar.
That was Stephanie Solomon. This is her third year at Salsa Day. Next, I headed up the stairs to find out what Tyler Ferguson was up to.
I'm in the cooking station. So once all the ingredients are chopped and put into the pot, we bring it up to this station and we cook for 20 minutes. We bring it to a boil and then we let it simmer for 20 minutes. Then when it finishes here, it goes back down the steps to the canning station.
That's fantastic. So it looks like you have how many cooking stations or heat sources?
Well, in my station, we have 2 burners, so we've been cooking pretty much 2 pots all day long. And then down in the canning station, there's also 2 burners, and those are the 2 burners we use for the canning process. And we've gotten a little backed up, so we have a 3rd canning station in the kitchen. It's ready to go, but we haven't had to take any cans there yet. But you want the water to be boiling and ready to go if we have to move to that station.
I follow a pot of cooked salsa down to the canning station to talk with Laura Haley.
Started out chopping, and now I'm canning.
All right. What's your favorite area to work in when you come to this?
I think I like them all, but I think this is fun just to bring them out and just see what's happening. So I think the canning area is fun, yeah.
You have to keep careful track of the time and everything?
Right, keep track of the time. You usually get a timer going, but yeah. The chopping station's great too because that's where you catch up with everybody and, you know, chit-chat and everything like that. So that's fun. I start out there and then I usually move over here.
This station's a little more serious.
Well, I don't know about that, but it's definitely fast-paced.
Gotcha.
Laura got me listening intently for the most satisfying sound of canning, the pop of the lid when the jar seals. Did you hear it? Okay, one more time. I asked Marcia and some of the other salsa makers, why would they want to get together for a day full of messy collective cooking and canning in the heat of late summer? It sounds exhausting to me.
It is a lot of work, but it's really fun, and it's also rewarding, and there's something just so incredibly awesome sharing this with other women, and also in the wintertime, opening up that jar of summer sunshine is just so delightful.
So why not just make some salsa at home in your own kitchen?
Well, I consider myself a worker bee, so I don't have all the equipment and all the know-how. So when we do it all together, everyone can take a part, but not every person needs to know how to do every single thing. So it's a really cool teamwork
type of situation. And it's more fun to be with friends and to talk and chat and drink a beer maybe and enjoy tastes of salsa. Yeah, it's just so much fun to be out here.
It's a lot about gathering with friends and doing something productive and fun together, and something that throughout the whole year we're reminded of it.
Amina Shabani shared the source of her motivation.
It's the community and also just being a part of the process, especially at the end when I eat the salsa in the winter. I think about the beautiful day, but it's just a community of women being here and, yeah, making good salsa, amazing salsa.
When she's not making salsa, Carrie Newcomer is an accomplished singer-songwriter. She has perhaps been the most inspired by the annual event.
Marcia tells me that you may have written a song that was inspired by Salsa Day.
I did. It's called The Work of Our Hands. And it's I was here one of the years, and what I noticed at the end of the day, that everybody was thinking about dividing up the jars, and there was this wonderful conversation about who they were planning to give their jars of salsa. We would keep some for ourselves, of course, but all these people we were planning to give the jars of salsa to. And it was just such a lovely thing that the work of our hands, these things we do that seem so small but are really so great.
Some of the hands working on the salsa have also joined Marcia in the field, growing the fresh ingredients.
It's just been such a pleasure in the last few years. Friends have started farming here. Some of us work through the winter, you know, building the soil and preparing the beds, and to kind of go through that whole cycle to putting salsa in jars together. And it's been wonderful.
My mother gave to me because it's good to put a little bit by. When the late snows fly, all that love so neatly came by the work of our hands.
And taking us out there was Carrie Newcomer's song, The Work of Our Hands, from her album, A Permeable Life. Thanks to all the salsa makers for sharing their day with me. I'm compelled to add a word of caution to those listeners inspired to can your own batch of salsa at home. Be sure to follow a canning recipe if you plan to use a boiling water bath method for salsa. Canning recipes will have the proper ratio of added acidity to make sure your product is safe to eat when you pop it open in the middle of winter. For links to trusted canning resources, check out our website, eartheats.org. Chef Daniel Orr has a great salsa recipe. His uses tomatillos in place of tomatoes. If you aren't familiar with tomatillos, they are round and green, about the size of a walnut. They belong to the nightshade family like tomatoes, but they grow more like a ground cherry, and they're covered in a papery husk, like a Chinese lantern. The fruit is firm, and it might remind you of a green tomato, with a distinct flavor. Once you've planted them in your garden, you're bound to find volunteers popping up every year. They tend to self-seed. Let's visit Chef Daniel Orr in the kitchen to find out what he likes to make with tomatillos.
So I'm just going to give these guys a nice wash. Tomatillos sometimes have kind of a sticky residue on the outside of them, so just want to give that a rinse. And I'm going to chop up some onions. And since we're going to put this in the food processor later, you don't need to worry about making them all pretty and perfectly square. And to make a nice batch of salsa, you probably need about 15-20 tomatillos and one big white onion, one chili pepper, and you can use whatever is your favorite. Okay, what we're gonna do is toss these in a bowl. Okay, I'm gonna add my chili pepper. We're gonna put a little lemon zest in this one. We're gonna put in about 4 or 5 cloves of garlic. And I'm going to toss that with just a couple tablespoons of olive oil. And what we're going to do different about this salsa is it's not going to be a raw salsa. We're going to roast these vegetables off, get them a little caramelized, and that will give them a lot of great flavor. So we got a preheated oven or a broiler going, and we're going to put these in an oven-proof pan. Sprinkle it just with a little bit of salt and pepper. Okay, and then we're going to put these under the broiler. What we want to do is to caramelize them a little bit, get a little bit of color on them, and that's also going to evaporate some of the moisture in the onions and the tomatillos, which will make the sauce a little bit thicker and give it great flavor.
This is a good time to let you know that you can find this recipe and many others on our website, eartheats.org.
So now it's got nice and caramelized. You can kind of see that it's cooked down a little bit. And we're going to take this and put it in the food processor. And again, you know, as we say on Earth Eats, we want you to make these recipes your own. You can add whatever flavors you like. If you have a bunch of cilantro in your garden, it would be great. I'm going to use some basil. So I've got probably about a cup of basil here. I'm going to add another toe of raw garlic. And we're going to pulse this. Okay, let me grab a spoon and give it a taste. That's pretty good. I'm going to add a little bit of lemon juice to it to kick up the acidity factor. And then you could also add, if you want to, some raw vegetables. If you wanted to add some raw tomatillos back to this to make it a little crunchier, if you wanted to add some raw red onion, that'd be nice. And again, great for classic chips and salsa. But also good for cooking. This would be wonderful served warm over a piece of grilled fish or grilled salmon, or tossed in a salad as a kind of a thick vinaigrette. Used as just as a straight dip with some pita chips would be very, very nice as well. The basil make it a little different than the typical cilantro, so it doesn't taste quite as familiar, but try different things. Try some basil, try some mint in this would be nice. Try, you know, whatever herbs you have around. Some tarragon could even be good with this.
Go ahead and experiment, but if you need a recipe as your base, find it at eartheats.org. And for another take on roasted salsa, check out Barbara Brozier's tomato-based version, posted on our website at eartheats.org. Production support for Earth Eats comes from Need More Coffee Roasters, a woman-owned coffee bar and roastery dedicated to roasting organic, direct trade, and fair trade coffee from small-scale farmers around the world. On the east side of Bloomington, corner of Pete Ellis and Longview. NeedMoreRoasters.com. Charles Schwab & Company, Incorporated, with a local branch on Morton Street in Bloomington. Independent branch leader Jeremy Zeichner, CFP, offers personalized financial plans matched to investors' goals. More at schwab.com/Bloomington. And Elizabeth Rue, enrolled agent and owner of Personal Financial Services, providing tax preparation for individuals and businesses. Located on the Beeline Trail. More information at personalfinancialservices.net. Thanks to everyone who helps make Earth Eats possible, including Aobon Binder, Chad Bouchard, Mark Chilla, Taylor Killo, Daniel Orr, and everyone at Farm Bloomington, and Harvest Public Media. Our executive producer is John Bailey.